Thank you, Wyatt, and good morning to everybody. Welcome to our meeting today, and I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I will call no names, but some of us guys in this room will be able to identify with the fellow I want to tell you about. He said, "We had a power outage at our house this morning, and my PC, my laptop, my TV, my DVR, my iPad, and my home theater system were all shut down. Then I discovered that my phone battery was completely flat. And to top all that off, it was raining outside, so I couldn't go golfing or fishing. I went into the kitchen to make some coffee and then realized that it too required power. So, I sat down and talked to my wife a few hours. She seems like a pretty nice person." You will have seen that story in one form or another. Sometimes it's not just the wife, but it's other family members or even friends. But the pace of life and the distractions we have make all of us able to identify with it and to forget that so much of the relationship in our lives depends on our taking the initiative to invest ourselves in good talking with our family. There's no letter in the New Testament which places more of a premium on what happens when we talk than James does. There's something about it in each of the five chapters, and then this longest section about words in the New Testament here in chapter 3. What goes missing if we're not careful are the two big assumptions from which everything James has to say on this subject grow. The two main things are, first, that religion that really blesses is religion which bridles the tongue for good. That's James 1, verse 26. And second, that faith which is alive and working uses the gift of speech to bless. That would be chapter 3 and verse 9. Both of those things. In other words, James would not say, faith can't show in just words. He would say that faith will show especially in words. And James is not saying just don't say bad words or don't say angry words. James is calling us to use the privilege of being able to communicate what our hearts think about to people that we love, and not to allow life just to shut us down in our own private world so that there's no connection with loved people around us. It makes sense if you think about James this way, that what he's saying about words has to be most true in the places where we are most ourselves, and that's at home. So even though what he is saying in James 3 has to do with the responsibility on teachers, there still are principles in it which should be used in our families. So how can we go about using the powerful and sometimes dangerous ability to speak for good in our families? There's more than this here, but let's just draw three big principles from this text this morning. Number one, for each of us, it begins with owning the power for good that our words have. Don't just allow, in other words, other people around you to have words and to claim that their words or what they say impact you or hurt you or lift you up or whatever, but to assume that your words have no such power. The images that James uses in the passage Wyatt read, Even the ones he uses in describing how easily we stumble in what we say, and boy, do we. His images all underline the power that one small word can have. James says a well-placed word's like a bit that puts the whole body of a strong horse at the service of a much less powerful person. That'd be verse 3. He says a word which is guided by wisdom is like the small, comparatively small rudder that puts a great big ship that's driven by powerful winds under the direction of the will of one person who has hold of the control of that rudder. And James says in verse 5, a word under control, yes, can be the small fire that sets in cycle a warmth and nourishing communication in a family's life. You can't say that something has power that's destructive without also recognizing the power for good which is there. One of the old commentators says, history affords numerous illustrations of the power of great oratory to encourage the depressed, to rouse the careless, to stir men and women to noble action, and to give expression to the deeper human emotions. The magic of words has played an incalculable part in the long story of human endeavor and human suffering. Ask yourself if that isn't also true in your own family's history and heritage. A whole lot of it has depended on words. The larger context of James' letter here underscores the point he's making even further, if you think about it. I mean, after all, James is using words when he talks to us about words, to communicate with us. He's told us in chapter 1 and verse 18 that God uses words to bring us forth to be His creatures. God uses words to show us what we need to be and what we're meant to be as we look in the mirror. And yes, neither just hearing nor just talking is any substitute for doing. He's made that clear at the end of chapter 2 here. But neither is acting without speaking enough to express real faith. He wants us to both do and speak as people who'll be judged by the perfect law of liberty, he says in chapter 2 and verse 12. You guys know what I'm getting at here. You've seen it happen before. You get crossways with somebody in your family. It can be husband, wife, parent, or child. You say something that hurts, or somebody says something that hurts you, and you snap back at them to settle the score, and you get snapped back at, and you just say to yourself, all right, that's how it's going to be. I just won't say anything the rest of this whole day. What we call that is pouting. That's a lot easier than simply to speak in order to accommodate good in your family. Living faith, then, gives credence to the tremendous power for good that words spoken in a loving setting have. What James is saying makes me think that some of the wonderful pictures of the Proverbs are again running in his mind. Proverbs 18, verse 21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Just listen to these without looking them up. I'll give them to you if you want them. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. If you love to communicate, to bless, you'll benefit from that in life. Proverbs 16 and 24, gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. And Proverbs 25 and 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. If you think about engravement work or that kind of thing, you can imagine that in your mind's eye. Own the power for good in your family, that your ability to express the thoughts and intentions of your heart has. To just avoid angry words may help, but it's not enough. The family needs more than silence. Number two, aim for consistency in what you say. But consistent in a certain way. James is calling for a particular kind of coherence in our words. One, a coherence that is made up out of what we say we believe and what we actually say to people that we love. What we say we love and what we actually say to people we love. In verse 9 of what Wyatt read, James reminds us, yes, bless the Lord and Father. But his implication is, also bless those who are made in the likeness of God. That's the consistency I'm talking about. We've been here blessing God today. Let's spend the rest of the week blessing each other. Verse 10, bless persons at one moment or in one setting, but then bless them in other settings too. Let there be a consistency there. Confess your faith, and then let your words correspond to your faith. It starts with what we're saying and what we're doing today around the Lord's table and in our prayers and in our songs, in this message, but it continues with what we say as the week goes along. The images James uses again show that he knows what he's talking about here. There's not reality without this kind of agreement that he's urging us on. A spring, well, one can't pour forth both fresh water and salt water, verse 11. A tree, well, one tree can't be both a fig tree and an olive tree. And neither can a grapevine produce anything but grapes. And the mouth, he doesn't say that a mouth doesn't. He says that a mouth shouldn't. What the mouth says to people should be in keeping with what it says to God. Now, you and I can recognize, I think, the need for that kind of consistency, but can I point out that the principle James is identifying reaches its farthest application in the relationships that are closest to us, the ones in our families. You think about what communication is. Communicating is sending a message. Communicating sends messages that always have three components. There's the actual content of what is said, but then there's the tone of voice, and then there's the nonverbal part of the message, which consists of stuff like the facial expression, the body posture, and then the subsequent actions. What the communication studies tell us is that the content, the actual words you say, is 7% of the message. The tone of voice is 38%. And the facial expression, body posture, actions, and so forth are 55%. You learn that best in family. When these three components are not complementary, that is, when they don't have consistency, they send confusing messages because they contradict each other. So talking for good in our families is a continuing process of bringing our faith and our character and our words and our manner into agreement with our intention that we're expressing. And that is called living in a family. Owning the power for good that your words have, and then aiming for consistency in the messages that you send. And then number three, actually use words to bless the people you have. When our kids are real, real little, and we're trying to teach them not to just grunt or to point at what they want or require, we teach them to use your words. Use your words. Well, and what I'm getting at is, in your family, in my family, in our family, let's use our words. What kind of words? We can describe them in a few ways. Gracious words. Colossians 4 and verse 6 says, "Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person." I don't know what the salt is, but I think the tone of graciousness, both in message and a tone of voice and in nonverbals, is what's called for here. We are people who live in a situation where other people get a chance to know us best, good and bad. We depend on their grace. Therefore, our words should communicate grace back. Words, secondly, good for building up. In Ephesians 4 and verse 29, we have, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up." Now, what kind of words are good for building up? Paul explains, as fits the occasion, takes into account what's going on in the life of that person you love and where they are, that it may give grace to those who hear. In other words, that does it bless? So gracious, and then talk that is intentionally chosen, both in timing and message, in order to build up the person who is loved. Third, words of counsel. We depend on our families to help us see how things really are in life and how and what would be best for us. I read recently of a father and his boy who one summer day went out in the boat on the lake fishing. And the story is that while they're out there in that boat, the boy is looking around that the creation all around, and he gets curious about the world all around, and he starts asking questions. "Dad," he says, "how does this boat float?" And the dad answers, "Don't really know, son." And the little fellow goes back to fishing, and in a little while he asks, "Dad, how do fish breathe underwater?" And the dad says, "I don't really know, son." A few minutes pass, and the boy asks, "Dad, why is the sky blue?" And the father replies again, "Don't really know, son." And finally, the little boy asks his father, "Dad, do you mind me asking you all these questions?" Dad says, "Of course not, son. If you don't ask questions, how are you going to learn anything?" Our efforts to provide counsel are severely limited by our own humanness. And yet, we owe it to our family members to be the best mirror for them that we can. I believe Kay had to marry me in order to know how old she is looking at me, you see. I think we learn most the true impact of what we have said watching the look in our children's faces. I can remember some moments in my life where I said the wrong thing at the wrong time without intending to. In Romans 15 and verse 14, Paul says to his readers, "I myself am satisfied about you, my brothers, that you yourselves are full of goodness, filled with knowledge and able to instruct one another. That's brotherliness there. I know that you have knowledge too. I know that you mean good. I know you're able to point me in a helpful direction. And then next, encouraging words. Words that kind of move us on. Mark Twain is said to have made the remark, I can live for 2 months on a good compliment. In 1 Thessalonians, Paul writes, therefore, encourage one another. Some versions translate it, comfort one another with these words. Encourage one another and build one another up just as you're doing. Words of appreciation are important. Please and thank you are not just manners. And thanksgiving is not just a message to God. It's also a message to those who are made in His image. In Paul's last letter, he says to Timothy, who has been his co-worker and helper, I thank God whom I serve as I remember you constantly in my prayers night and day. And as I remember your tears, I long to see you, that I may be filled with joy. I was thinking and working on this. Here it is, December 1st. Bill, if you had things you meant to say to somebody in 2019, you better get it said. Say it now. That's why this sermon will go on for another hour and a half. Not really, but... not really. Say it now. Words of appreciation. And then fourth, or fifth, words of hope. Words of hope. This is not fifth, it's sixth. I'm sorry, I can't count. Words of hope. There are so many messages of hopelessness and negativity in our culture. Just think about how important this is. Paul gets to the end of the last chapter of his last letter. I think it's interesting that he says to Timothy, but the Lord stood by me and strengthened me. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely to His heavenly kingdom. What he's doing is sharing the blessing of hope to this young man, younger man, who will be brokenhearted when Paul is offered up, as he apparently was not long after he wrote those words. Own the power for good that your words have, especially in your family. Aim for consistency in what you say so that what you say and the way you say it correspond. And use your words to bless the people around you. Talking for good, that is, intentionally and continually speaking to bless, is a tree of life for a family. I think Proverbs 15 and 4 will say that, and it'll bear wonderful fruit over time. It is not easy. No human being, James says, can tame the tongue, but we can do our best to control it and use it for good. Start with faith. Bless God first. Do it once and for all, and then do it regularly. And the rest will gradually tend to become more in keeping with what it is to bless Him. I wonder if you've made the start at that yet. Have you been brought forth by the Word of Truth to be one of His creatures? Have you, in making the good confession, turned away from self-rule and submitted to the rule of Christ in baptism and to His name? And then have you been walking in the way that's consistent with that confession? The Lord's Day is always a statement to us, this is the time for a fresh start. If we can help with that, let us know that today by coming while we stand and sing together.